This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. I hope you are having a lovely Thursday. I know that we are because it is our spring member drive. This is the time that we get to hear from our listeners who want to support us and become members. We have had people write little poems for us or just say nice things about the programming, and we would love to hear from you. You can call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. I have horticulturist Ron Smith in studio with me today because it's time to talk about lawns and gardens. And Ron, you're a member of Prairie
Absolutely.
Public.
Been a member since almost the beginning of time here. When we first heard of North Dakota Public Radio, it was when it was back on the NDSU campus. And I thought, oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I'm on the campus myself. Went over, took a look at it. They set me up. You want to talk about horticulture? I said, sure. And I've been talking about horticulture ever since then and have been a member as well. And they do a very good job of keeping track of me. And I've increased my membership over the years. And they do it in the most painless way.
Well, we appreciate hearing that. We appreciate your support. It certainly does make all of the difference. 800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Now, Ron, of course, I would love to just talk to you about why you love public radio.
Well, it's easy to do. That's too easy.
We're also having you in because you are an expert in your field. Yes.
Well, I know a lot about it. I shun the word expert because there's always something new to learn.
Oh, you're being way too humble. You are being way too humble. You know a lot more than I do about it, and that's why we have you on a show like Main Street.
I'll buy that.
And I feel like, in particular this year, it was pretty dry.
Yes, very dry. It still is here
in
Fargo.
Yeah, it really is. Are you concerned about any specific, you know, lawns are resilient, but is there some threat to some trees or some of our favorite perennials out there?
It's a good idea to keep track of your trees and how they're reacting or acting. Mm. If you haven't had rain locally, good soaking rain, not these little dampers that we've had here in Fargo, I would encourage you sometime between now and Memorial Day weekend to go out and lay the hose down around the canopy of the tree, moving it in different spots around the canopy, under the canopy, edge, where the feeder roots are, and let it soak in. And if we have a good soaking rain between now and then or two, why, that would be great. But if you see the buds opening and swelling and opening up, the leaves coming out, you want to encourage them to continue to come out. And so don't neglect the water. Don't say, well, they're doing okay. They're leafing out. They could leaf out and die if there's no water in that soil. And so the rain that we've had here in the eastern part of the state has not done enough.
And it's been less rain.
Yeah,
in
to
the
get into the root system. It just hits the ground and evaporates, really.
So let that hose run for a minute?
Let
five
it run
minutes?
For 30 minutes.
30? Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, 30 minutes for it's a trickle.
You
don't have
that
it going out full blast.
Just sense.
Have a trickle here and give yourself 30 minutes. Go around about four places under the canopy of the tree, and that'll get most of the feeder root system. And give it a shot in the arm so that when they do leaf out, they'll leaf out with plenty of water.
That's,
you know, you don't want to run a marathon without
any
water.
I'm cranky if I haven't had enough water.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm cranky for lots of different reasons, but that's one of them.
Water is one of them, right, yeah. So if you see the buds on your evergreens, there's been a lot of concern about evergreens dying out because of the drought. Well, if you take a look at the buds on the evergreens and they're plump, they're starting to swell, they'll probably be all right. But they should also receive some water. I remember 100 years ago when Dave DeCock was with the local county extension service here as a horticulturist, he and I went out and took a look at a lot of the arborvitaes that were, you know, kicking the bucket, it looked like.
And, yeah, because those get brown. Like,
yeah, they were very, very
fast.
Brown. But you took a look at the buds, and some of the buds were still very plump and green. So we told people, wait, give it until around the middle of July before you yank those out of the ground and replace them. And A lot of them did come back. And, of course, a lot of them died. But give yourself, give the trees a chance to either make it or not make it. And, of course, it wasn't as much of a drought situation back then as it was just winter burn. The wind in the winter that we had that year, and I can't remember which one it was, literally fried the foliage with the sunshine. We had sub-zero temperatures and sunshine, sub-zero temperatures and sunshine. And where they got hit like that, that cooked a lot of them, but some of them were resilient enough to come back.
So what have Ron and Betsy started for seeds?
Well, my lovely wife has had cabin fever with the COVID, and she gets anxious to get things started. We've got geraniums, and she started petunias. She's got peppers going now. She had some pumpkins that she started. She put them out already, and, of course, the cold that we had nuked them out right off the bat, the little seedlings. We have some more. We just stuck some more seed in the ground where the old ones died, the previous ones died. And let's see, I've got some kohlrabi, some, what else do I have out there? Some, of course, chives, they're indestructible. But tomatoes primarily, peppers, and we're going to be growing some sweet corn as well. So you can put that in. Coming up here probably after Mother's Day weekend, you can go ahead and do something like that and be successful and not have to worry about it dying out. So I would say when you want to start getting into the ground, give yourself at least until this past this coming weekend, Mother's Day weekend, and stick your seeds into the ground. If you have any cold nights coming up that next week, it's not going to hurt them because they're an inch below the soil surface. So they should be able to take that kind of cold without any problem. It's when they start to emerge is when it's going to be a problem.
That's when they don't like the
so
cold.
Hopefully after Mother's Day weekend, we aren't going to have really cold weather to worry about. 45, 50 degrees, that's fine. We can, our plants can tolerate that.
Sure. So. Yeah. Makes them stronger, right?
Yes.
That's what we say about North Dakotans.
Yeah, right.
That's why we're so strong.
Yes, absolutely. the other thing I like to talk about, we've had our forsythia bloom, and the lilac buds are starting to swell, so that window of time between the forsythia and the lilacs is the ideal time to go ahead. If you have had a lot of annual weed problems in your lawn, this would be a good time to go ahead and put it down because the grass is beginning to grow. Some people have already mowed their lawns, but that would be the good time to go ahead and put down a pre-emergence weed control, and that's annual weeds like crabgrass. That would be a good thing to go ahead and control it with, at this particular point in time. I know a lot of people are going to be talking about how rough their lawn is. Mine is just the same way. It's from the night crawlers in the soil, moving, putting the soil
They're
up.
Active little buggers, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes it rough. You can get out and roll the lawn if you want to. That's a lot of work. It's going to correct it temporarily, but the doggone night crawlers, earthworms, will come back again and open up the soil, and you'll have more mounds to go ahead and mow over. So just make sure you have good
It's
footing.
A nice contrast when you live on the flat part of the state. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
You at least get some hills
yeah,
in the
yeah.
yard.
Gives us our minor mountains, I like to call them. So,
you know, I was talking recently with Sue Balcom, who joins us on Thursdays also to talk about food, and she is a farmer's market producer out in Bismarck. And she was saying that even some people in the farmer's markets have had a hard time getting a hold of the seed that they need because of the pandemic. So many more people are concerned about reliable access to food, and then also, you know, they had a little bit more time on their hands and nowhere to go. And so there has been this resurgence in growing our own food.
Well, funny you should mention that, because prior to coming over here to the studio, I stopped by at a garden center and checked their seed rack, and they had ample seed still in their rack of all the popular things you want: beans, peas, corn, tomatoes, peppers, onions, whatever. Very, very well-stocked seed racks. So, yes, some of them might be sold out in very, very high traffic areas.
And like, I'm sure she's buying in bulk, too, she's selling.
If you have to buy 50 pounds of them, it's going to be pretty tough to do. But for the typical backyard gardener, these little packets that you buy for a couple dollars is hopefully more than enough to get through the growing season here to eat nothing but good, fresh food that you've raised yourself.
Good starter advice for the first-time gardener out there.
Yes. Plant only what you like. Brussels sprouts, I would go on a starvation diet with.
I will eat all your Brussels sprouts.
You would? Okay.
I love them.
You could eat them with Betsy then.
Oh, perfect.
So I just do not like them. I think they're humanity's, nature's.
I hate celery. I feel like I'm being slowly poisoned.
With what?
Celery.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I hate celery. Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, the point is plant what you like. Don't overplant more than you can go ahead and eat, your family, you and your family, or start giving it away if you get too much. Of course, watch out for zucchini. One zucchini plant can go ahead and maybe supply half the neighborhood that you live in. So, but it's fun to grow.
Yeah.
It's so rampant and so productive, and it's a lot of fun to go ahead and grow.
Plus, there's that night in August that's like sneak out and leave a zucchini on your neighbor's porch day.
Yes, yes.
My neighborhood does that. It's
look
really
for convertibles
fun.
With their tops down. So.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Have a lot of fun.
What else should we be thinking about this time of year for our lawns, for our plants, for our trees?
Well, there's the ever-present concern of the emerald ash borer and the Asian longhorn beetle coming in and destroying our trees. Take a look at your trees, your street trees, and your primary trees on your property, and see if they are suffering at all. Suffering with elms, it's going to be a flagging or a browning or a yellowing of the foliage at the top of the branch, mm-hmm. of the canopy, I should say. That's something to be concerned about. Get an arborist out there or call up the city if it's on the city property on the curb. Have them come out and take a look at it. Is that my tree dying? Or this tree, it looks pretty bad. It looks like it's been shot at and hit all over the place. Does that indicate that there's a borer there of some kind? There's the ash lilac borer. There's the emerald ash borer, which is totally destructive. And the longhorn beetle are just a couple of them. But, you know, look at them, notice them. Don't think that they're permanent factors right there. Mm-hmm. They're something that you have to look at. The other thing I want to kind of raise a flag on, I got a notice in the mail. Ron Smith, they knew who I was, which was amazing to me because I never heard from him. It's a nursery in South Carolina that sent me this notice saying, Ron Smith, would you like to have a fast-growing tree on your property? Fast-growing tree delivered, what? And, of course.
From South Carolina.
Yeah. And I'm like, where is this from? Is this locally? And I look in a very, very fine print, you know, and such a nursery in the Carolinas. And I thought, oh, my gosh. Well, what are they at? What's the tree they're talking about that's fast-growing? The honey locust, which is a fast-growing tree. So this is one of these things where it's partial truth, but it's not totally the whole truth because we have locally grown trees here that are genetically adapted to our climate.
Right.
That
the Carolinas have a different zone.
Yeah, they have their own clone down there that does well.
Okay.
They move it up here, it's going to die of shock, the first cold snap that we have here. So don't give into that temptation. And I can imagine the tree that they would deliver would probably be from your elbow to the fingertip. That would be the tree. Mm-hmm. Because they can't do that. There's no way they can deliver a quality tree of any size, of any merit, of enduring quality with, you know, shipping it in by mail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so watch out for that.
I'm always a fan of going to, I can't remember if it's the county or the Soil and Water Conservation District, but there's somebody where you can get, a very small tree the size of my forearm, but it's only a dollar or two.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, and then I can order 10 and hopefully two of them start to grow.
Yeah.
But I've gotten a couple of sumac that way, and actually it just works out our neighborhood. We all go in on one collective order mm-hmm. so that we have some similar trees, but also some variety in the
Absolutely.
Area.
Absolutely. That's good. And that, there's nothing wrong with that because that's locally adapted plant material that will tolerate our climate, our shifty climate that we have. Too hot, too wet, too dry, too cold, too many twos. T00.
Right, yeah. But it is a nice affordable way to,
yes,
to be
I
able
agree
to
with
do
that.
That.
Yeah, unless you're a plant snob, you have to have the latest invention or the latest researcher, mm-hmm. recommended tree, which I'm not making fun of that. That's we need new varieties being brought in, new cultivars being brought in. But if you just want to grow a nice looking shrub tree, go to the Conservation Service and see if you can get some.
All right. We have horticulturist Ron Smith in studio to talk about plants, trees, all things gardening periodically throughout the growing season, which, of course, we are just now
getting into the
thick of it. So please, listeners, if you want to engage with Ron, you can send an email to mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. You can also send a question to the Prairie Public Facebook page, and we'll have you back in to answer those questions as they come in. And just one more reminder that we do have a spring member drive, and the number to call or text the word donate to is 800-359-4145, or click and join prairiepublic.org. Set that up as a sustaining membership. It's kind of like planting a perennial instead of an annual.
Yes, absolutely. It's totally painless. You know, it's one of these things. Sure, you shouldn't miss $10 a month coming out of your
right.
You know, what do I get for it? Well, do you need anything for it?
You get this programming.
Yes, good programming. That's what you get. Absolutely, and your voice, and Doug's voice, and maybe sometimes
like how I just immediately stopped talking as soon as you said that. I was like, wait, people want that. All right. Well, Ron, we always appreciate having you in studio. And actually, this is the first time we've gotten to see each other
for a couple of years now.
So.
But you blush so nicely, and I've missed that.
Stop
that.
Really
keep it up.
I don't know how you always do that. All right. Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome.
I'm Peter Sagal. In 2020, we learned how to do Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me without you there. We know you don't like the fake applause, but trust me, it's better than the other sound effects we tried.
I've got a head for business and a body for parasites.
We really miss you. Give us a round of virtual applause by giving to this NPR station right now.
And it's easy to do. You can start by calling or texting the word donate to 800-359-4145 or give online to prairiepublic.org. We don't have a laugh track to play for you, although I think we could, because sometimes I think I'm funny and then nobody laughs and then I'm like, oh, I wish I had a laugh button. But hey, see, right now, Matt's in studio with me and he's not even laughing out loud.
This is how you say it. It's so funny.
I'm in studio with Matt O'Lean. He is our in-house movie critic who also had to learn how to redo his job in 2020, as did the entire movie industry. That's starting to change. You're going back into theaters and working on seeing movies, right?
Yeah, I've been to theaters. You know, it's off and on. It depends what's there.
Yeah.
But some of the Oscar bait films ended up at in theaters around here, so I did see some of those. And right now, just kind of waiting for those big releases like Black Widow and In the Heights and West Side Story and Maverick, Top Gun. But anyway, this is our spring membership drive, Ashley, and it's a blast doing movie reviews for Main Street every week. It kind of marks the start to the weekend,
right?
I always feel. And it also symbolizes, I think, Prairie Public's commitment to covering the arts, whether it's movies, plays, poetry, or literature. You'll hear about it and experience it through lively, in-depth conversations. We hold these things up and give voice to the numerous arts organizations that dot this region and make it a better place to live. Help Main Street continue to have a home on the air and be that beacon for the arts in North Dakota. Call or text DONATE to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org.
To put it mildly, the world has changed. I mean, and change is inevitable. Even before the pandemic, streaming services started to, you know, change how we make movies and not just episodic TV shows. Matt, as you've covered it, these award shows are handing out statues to Netflix and to Amazon, and not just to the big movies that have been on screen. The way that we consume entertainment has been evolving, and public radio is no exception. If you're not just listening to the broadcast, well, you're probably listening to a podcast. There are hundreds, probably thousands of podcasts out there at this time. But, you know, if you look on that NPR Turned 50, NPR was a leader in putting podcasts out there, but you're still hearing things like This American Life and Radiolab, whether it's on legacy media or on demand. What hasn't changed is the talent of public media professionals. So however you listen, call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or give online at prairiepublic.org.
And one thing you don't hear on Prairie Public, and I bet you don't mind that you don't, commercials. But the radio has to be paid for somehow, and that's why we come to you a couple times a year during these membership campaigns to ask for your help in paying for the programming and all the nuts and bolts behind a nonprofit operation like Prairie Public. There's the cost of equipment, towers, transmitters, microphones, the free-to-use but always expensive digital apps and streams. There's the talented people like Ashley up front and behind the scenes at Prairie Public and NPR. Your gift helps make the work that reaches your ears possible. You enjoy it, so please help ensure Prairie Public is always there for you. Call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org.
And Matt Olean, your segment continues to be a very popular feature on Main Street. We hear from historian Tom Ezern. We have Sue Balcom coming up. And of course, we also get to hear from an expert biologist. Chuck Lura joins us once a week, or more or less, with his natural North Dakota essay. And this week, it's just in time for spring wildflower season.
Every day is a great day for getting out and enjoying a little natural North Dakota. But this time of the year is a real treat. The birds are active and warblers are moving through the area. Mammals and other animals are quite active as well. And if you have some woodlands nearby, and most of us do, now's a great time to go explore those woodlands and enjoy the woodland spring wildflowers. There's plenty to observe while walking in the woods, but when it comes to wildflowers, spring and early summer is arguably the best. Most woodland wildflowers will bloom before the trees and shrubs become fully leafed out. After that, most of the later blooming flowers will often be restricted to areas in and near openings in the forest canopy, such as that found along the hiking trails. And there's something special about seeing the spring wildflowers in bloom. You can expect to see several species flowering now or in the near future, but here are a few of the more common and interesting ones. Tall white violet. This violet can be found in woodlands across the state. You'll notice dark lines on the lower petal, which serve as honey guides to assist pollinators to find the nectar. The downy yellow violet is also a common spring woodland violet in the eastern part of the state. Wild lily of the valley, Mayflower or Canada Mayflower, can also be found across the state and, as the name implies, has a resemblance to the domesticated lily of the valley. This species is occasionally sold as a flower for shaded habitats and gardens. False Solomon seal, or false spikenard. A plant closely resembles the true Solomon seal, but produces flowers in a terminal panicle. Both this and the true Solomon seal can be found across most of the state, with the true Solomon seal blooming earlier in June. Nodding trillium has three large leaves. The solitary three-petaled, 1 to 2 inch white flower is easy to overlook because it hangs under the leaves and points downward. Look for it in woodlands roughly east of a line from Bottineau County to Ransom County. Wherever you go, these and other spring wildflowers will make your walk through the woods enjoyable. I've included photographs of these wildflowers along with the text of this natural North Dakota. You can access it at prairiepublic.org. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. Subscribe to the podcast or find past episodes at prairiepublic.org.
Still to come on Prairie Public, Sue Balcom honors her mom just in time for Mother's Day. But now it's time for the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. This month, agencies that help low-income residents escape poverty are being honored for their work. That includes efforts in North Dakota, where leaders say the pandemic has provided opportunities to be more effective in the future. May is Community Action Awareness Month, and the statewide agency for North Dakota has been honored with a proclamation from the governor's office. Andrea Olson with the Community Action Partnership of North Dakota says, despite a year in which her staff had to shift to working remotely, they were still able to serve clients for issues such as affordable housing.
We had over 7,700 outcomes that were obtained. People were obtaining and maintaining their housing. They were avoiding eviction.
Olson says they've spent the better part of a year in response mode to get immediate help to people affected by the crisis. Looking ahead, she says they'll hone in on a key issue for their organization.
Our statewide needs assessment confirmed for us that affordable housing across North Dakota is still the number one need identified by people who are experiencing poverty.
Community Action Partnership also helps with weatherization for low-income households and assists military veterans. 50 years ago, North Dakota Rural Electric Cooperatives partnered with Bismarck State College to provide line worker training. And as of today, ground was broken on a new line worker training center to be built at the North Dakota REC headquarters in Mandan.
The line workers that graduate from our program are one of that keeps our homes powered and keeps our communities lit.
BSC President Douglas Jensen.
Bismarck gives the students a unique advantage to provide hands-on experiential training needs to make graduating our workforce needs a reality. Our individuals go out into the workforce ready for the job day one because of that experience. And that is so critically important. It's a lot more than just learning from a book. It's touching it, feeling it, doing it, experiencing it.
The $5 million project is scheduled to open next summer. Funding comes from a $4 million grant from the U.S. Department of Commerce, matched by $1 million from RECs. And Parker Hansen is a college student at Augustana University in Sioux Falls. The 24-year-old from Hawley, Minnesota, is a baseball pitcher at the college who had his prosthetic arm stolen from his vehicle earlier this week. It was a tough loss, but the theft resulted in an outpouring of support after Hansen posted the theft on Facebook. He was born without a left arm, but was able to adapt to play baseball since he was a kid. Many now want to donate to a fund to help replace the prosthetic. However, there is a problem. NCAA rules prevent him from accepting donations until the end of the season, but that could change because of his situation.
The athletic administration down here at Augie had me sign a waiver to, they're going to see if I can get a basically clearance to have a GoFundMe for my situation I'm in. And then what I plan to do with that too is whatever money I don't use towards my prosthetic, I want to give back. Give back to what helped me get to where I am.
The equipment is estimated to cost an estimated $15,000. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Coming up this week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour, we talk about citizenship with President Thomas Jefferson.
We make Thomas Jefferson take the American citizenship test of all new immigrants.
And unsurprisingly, he does quite well.
The only ones he got right are the ones in saying who wrote the Declaration of Independence and who had a domed house in Virginia.
Oh, that's not exactly right. He knew the answers to all of the questions, and it was great fun to present them to him.
I'm surprised at how many questions Mr. Jefferson got right. I was living in fear that I was going to be thrown out of Virginia first and America second.
We begin the conversation with Jefferson talking about immigration during his time and how important it was to build America.
A nation with just 6 million people when he was inaugurated on March 4th, 1801, and as he said, room enough for the 100th and the 1,000th generation to the West.
Please join us for all that and more on this week's Thomas Jefferson Hour.
Sunday at 11 Central, 10 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and joining me now is root cellar Sue. Sue Balcom joins us once a week from her farm outside of Mandan, the root cellar's farm, to talk about food. Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, maybe this will be like the appetizer to talking about food. We're going to talk about how you can support programming like this, because this is our spring member drive. And we are appealing to you, our lovely listeners, to take on a little bit more active of a role. And that activity comes from you picking up that phone or going online and making an investment. It's a very simple process. You can call or text the word donate to 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. And when you do it during a show like Main Street or a segment like Main Street Eats, what you're saying, this is like voting. This is the kind of programming that you appreciate, right, Sue?
Right. And my feelings could get hurt quite easily if they decided to, like, can me one day,
oh,
you know?
Right? Yeah. Let's not hurt Sue's feelings.
Right. This is important to me. I never have ever had such a platform for talking about the things I love as Main Street Eats. I really appreciate this time with you all.
We love that you just used that word platform, because that's what it is. It is a platform for thoughtful discussion, for context, for analysis, for learning things about food, Sue. Last week I bought some halva because I was so inspired by the recent segment that we did, and I was like, oh, that's right. I do love this stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so many people comment. Actually, I have been recognized not as Ashley Thornburg, but as the person who gets to interview Sue Balcom once a week. And I thought, oh, that's delightful.
Well, that really, I think my face is red. Can you see?
Oh, no. No, Sue, that's not how radio works.
Oh, we're shoot. That's the best part about this,
I
is
know,
that you guys
right?
really don't see what I look like all the time. So.
Right. But what you do get is you get to hear these conversations that happen organically between people. Someone like Sue, who is so steeped in what she does. Yeah, we think about what we're going to talk about ahead of time, but mostly
it's whatever comes out of my mouth.
I was going to say it nicer than that. I was going to say, you know, she can just do this kind of thing off the top of her head, because it's something that she
it's
lives.
My life,
yes,
right?
It is.
That, and you know, when I was young in high school, I did a lot of drama when I was in high school, but I remember one morning, when I get out of bed, I'm like a bird. You know how the birds start chirping this time of year, and like it's almost
I thought
deafening.
You were going to say eating worms. But
well, that too.
That's
but,
a different Main Street Eats.
Yeah,
segment.
Different. My dad always said, oh, I wish you were on the radio. I'm like, really, Dad? And he goes, yeah, because then I could turn you off.
We don't want you to turn off, Sue. What we want you to do is invest in this programming. Pick up that phone, and you can either call or text the word donate to 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. Sue joins us once a week to talk about food. It's also something that Main Street Eats is put out as a podcast, so you can listen to just the Sue segments, and you can listen, you know, on demand, an increasingly popular way to consume your favorite media. The number, again, you can call or text the word donate to 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. Now, Sue, it is our spring member drive, but we're also coming right up on that other big May thing, Mother's Day.
May is jam-packed full
it
of
is,
things.
Isn't it?
Holy cow. It was just by accident that I remembered it was Mother's Day, because I do not have a mother here on Earth anymore. Mm. Last year, actually, I was feeling sorry for myself, so I went and made myself a mother in my studio, and she sits on my shelf now, little gray-haired lady with a blue dress on, because that was my mom's favorite color.
Oh, that's adorable and slightly creepy.
Slightly creepy, yeah. My friends are like, you're the only person I know that's ever made yourself a mom. Like, well, you know.
I thought you were going to say like a vinegar mother or something, like oh, something to make
go.
Another batch of vinegar.
Hey, but maybe that's what I'll do this year, is I'll make that kind of a mother instead. So, but you know, when we started talking about doing this little spring break pledge drive sort of thing, I thought, now what would be something fun to talk about? And I happen to have possession, at least for a short time, my mother's recipe box. And when I go out and do special talks about my books that I've written or gardening or cooking in general, usually end the talk by taking out this recipe box and randomly selecting a recipe and telling a little story about my mom. Because my whole life, I think, could be played out with my recipe books and drawer. You know, everything has a memory, as I'm sure you and the other listeners also remember their parents through food. You know, it was a big deal to be German and eat all the time like we do.
So what's a certain food that as soon as you smell it or think it or taste it, you're like, I remember the love of my mother right now?
You know, it's really weird because it's the two soups that we used to have on Sunday dinner after church. And it was an either-or thing. One Sunday it was chicken noodle, and one Sunday it was vegetable. And she would serve it in this great big yellow bowl that belonged in a set of like four. There was a red one, a blue one, a green one, and a yellow one. And she would probably make the noodles homemade, and then she would simmer the chicken. And I can still hear my dad slurping chicken off the bone because she would serve that on the side. Well, by the time you're done making soup stock, there's really not a lot of flavor left in that chicken anymore. But that was always, you know, the family would come home from church and we would sit down at the table and she would bring that bowl over with the Big Dipper in. And we always ate our noodle soup with cinnamon in. That was, you know, passed around. Everybody put in as much as they wanted.
Cinnamon and, in a chicken noodle soup?
Yes, you should try it. I'm not sure why that is so complimentary to the chicken stock. But then there was always the, let's see, what else? Ketchup.
I'm out.
Meat. I don't even buy ketchup anymore. It wouldn't be in my house if my husband didn't.
It's fine. Like, I have nothing like specifically against ketchup, but cinnamon and ketchup in a chicken noodle soup.
Well, tomato.
Were you pregnant or high when you were eating this?
No, tomato noodle soup, you know? Like, haven't you ever had a tomato noodle soup at some nice little restaurant in the middle
like
of nowhere?
Like a spaghetti sauce?
No.
Like a ketchup?
You know, no. You're going to have to come to my house sometime, and I'll make you some homemade tomato noodle soup, which is what I'm making this weekend for Mother's Day, weirdly enough. I am going to go down and visit my dad, who is still living at the Heritage Center in Jamestown, and I'm making homemade noodles because I'm still practicing on the art of noodle making. And then we're going to have chicken noodle soup. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to encourage them to try the cinnamon too. So,
well, let me know how that goes. I feel like I can be an adventurous eater, but I don't know about that. I guess they're both kind of warming.
I don't know. It's just the strangest thing. But you got to have a really good chicken noodle soup, and I make a really dynamite chicken noodle soup.
I bet you do.
And there's something really nourishing about that. You know, soup is nourishing, but chicken noodle soup is always supposed to be like a kind of a cure-all. So,
right.
But I really have so many deja vu moments when I'm in the kitchen.
Oh, I bet.
I walk into the kitchen, I pull out a recipe, I turn around and say to myself, I got to call my mom and make sure that I'm doing this right. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's my role now.
Me.
I've replaced my mom. So my brother will call and he'll go, can you explain this Coogan recipe to me? And I'm like, well, yes. But it
that's
takes
how
a
traditions
practice.
Work, though.
I know. Yeah. It's kind of sad.
You're bearing the torch. You know, think of yourself like the Olympic torch runner. Like, that's your job now.
Burn the kitchen down.
Okay, that's... This is not where I was going with that, Sue. But sure.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, making any kind of German dish is always kind of like, I just have one moment where I'm thinking, I really need to call my mom. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in the kitchen making Coogan with her and her friend Gladys. Gladys and Harold lived on a farm outside of Fredonia, and that's where we went to butcher our chickens. We would make a day of it. We'd go out there and start early in the morning with the head cutting and then the plucking and then the gutting, and then we'd go to the Dairy Queen, then I'd come home and barf. It was a long day for a little kid, you know. But that was something that I think we're missing out in society today, is the fact that they got together and they butchered chickens, and my mom froze her chickens in milk cartons. You know, she would save milk cartons all year long, and then she would stuff a whole bird into a milk carton and fill it with water, so they were like frozen inside a block of ice, and then put in the freezer. And of course, they stacked really well.
Were chickens
well because
smaller
they were,
back then, or were milk cartons bigger?
I think that chickens were smaller back then because they weren't fed so many hormones and things like that.
Okay.
And there were different breeds too, of course.
How about like a cookie or a dessert that is really reminds Subakam of your mom?
My mom's chocolate chip cookie recipe. Oh, wait. We already talked about that, didn't we?
But that was somebody else's. That was something you found on the internet. That's not the same as mom's.
And I recently made chocolate chip cookies. And her recipe has oatmeal in it, and they're a crispier cookie. They're not soft like a Toll House. And it's a big batch. And then my husband discovered that if you put a cookie in the bottom of a bowl and microwave it for X amount of seconds and then put ice cream on top of it,
oh,
holy cow.
JC is living large.
Yes, he is like, this is the best thing I've ever had. I'm like, you're how old and you finally figured this out? Shoot. Oh my gosh. But she made awesome caramel rolls. She used to make this, she called it apple slices, and what it was a pan, let's see, what do they call those? There's a word for a pie that's baked in a cookie sheet, and this thing had like a great big piece of pie crust on the bottom, and then it would have cornflakes crushed over the top of that, and then apples, and then another layer of delicious pie crust. My mom was really good at making pie crust. And then it would have a glaze on the top, like a powdered sugar kind of glaze. That was another thing. And I haven't had that in years and years. I might have to dig that recipe out, too.
Is it just called a sheet pan pie?
Yeah, there's a slab pie. That's what that's called.
That's what a slab pie is.
Oh, yes, okay. A slab pie is put in a flat baking sheet instead of in a round pie tin. So, and then of course there's the apple pie that my relatives are like, well, if we come to your house, we want to have apple pie. And I was thinking, well, we didn't have apple pie the last time you came. I don't know what you're talking about. But it was my neighbor gave us a bottle of apple pie. I have no idea what the ingredients are, but they thought that was the bomb. So now I'm famous for two apple pies.
Aw, delightful.
Oh, here's another thing that she used to make. Have you ever had a sour cream raisin pie?
Mm-hmm.
That was my brother's favorite pie, and it is so rich and so sweet that I hardly ever make that. But it was one of the things that she would make just for him all the time. I remember that very, very well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a lovely legacy and a lot of great ways to remember your mom. And we hope that's true for all of our listeners out there, that you find a special way to honor your mother. And if you are a mother, to honor yourself, and hopefully that your kids are honoring you as well today. Sue Balcom joins us once a week from her farm outside of Mandan, the Root Cellars Farm, to talk about food. Sue, thanks. As always.
Thanks. And remember, don't be my dad. Support Prairie Public so I can be on the radio.
1-800-359-4145. You can call or text the word donate to that number. And again, it's 1-800-359-4145. Or you can also click and join at prairiepublic.org.
Hi, I'm Jack Russell Weinstein, host of Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life. It seems like every business in the world uses consultants, but do we really know what they do? What makes one better than another, and do they have ethical standards, or are they out there just to make a buck? On our next episode, we'll ask these questions and more. So join me and my guest, Bob Colleran, as we dive into the philosophy of consulting on Why Radio, Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 6th. May is National Historic Preservation Month, so today we share another story of North Dakota additions to the National Register of Historic Places. Due to population growth following World War II, the need arose for more schools in Grand Forks. The new schools constructed between 1949 and 1965 were the mid-century style. Showcasing flat roofs, rows of windows, brick and steel construction, and using green space, these schools drew on the skills of local architects and marked the progression of the budding population. Samuel Teal DeRemer was a local Grand Forks architect who was born in New Jersey in 1896. His family moved to Grand Forks in 1902, and his architect father, Joseph Bell DeRemer, designed a number of buildings in the growing town before leaving for Los Angeles. He returned to Grand Forks in 1919 and entered into a partnership with his son, Samuel. After the senior DeRemer retired in 1937, Samuel continued to work in the region, eventually forming the firm DeRemer, Harry, and Kennedy. DeRemer designed Lewis and Clark Elementary, which was built in 1953, anchoring the neighborhood as Grand Forks pushed southward. In 1955, he designed a mid-century-style gymnasium that was added to the old Wilder Elementary, a 19th-century structure. The school was eventually rebuilt to match the newer gymnasium. That project was handled by another architect firm, Wells Denbrook, the same firm that would also add an addition to Lewis and Clark Elementary. Viking Elementary was built in 1957, designed by Samuel DeRemer's firm, denoting again how enrollments had increased. The firm of DeRemer, Harry, and Kennedy also designed Ben Franklin Elementary in 1960, as well as its addition in the late 1980s, maintaining compatibility with the original design. Typical to mid-century schools, green space was important in all these projects. Lewis and Clark was adjacent to a playground, a sports field, and to a public outdoor pool. Viking Elementary was near Cox Park and a playground. Ben Franklin has no basement, so it had a larger footprint. The building was constructed with a courtyard, allowing natural light into the hallways. All these buildings in the mid-century style showcased the typical flat roof and long rows of windows. Listen next week to hear more about these schools as we continue to acknowledge National Historic Preservation Month. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Could giving low-wage Americans cash without conditions for a year help fix inequality? Programs that push the concept are becoming more mainstream. Tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
One last little reminder in Main Street today to let you know that everything that you hear is made possible by member support. And it starts with your involvement. You can call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. I love the pledge drives because it's also our opportunity to interact with our listeners and our members on a firsthand basis. And we got a comment from a listener in Montana the other day, and she said, I'm in North Dakota for a month, and I really enjoy the programming on Prairie Public. Good job. I especially enjoy, Main Street. Thank you. I'm an NPR junkie, and though I'm happy to support my local NPR station in Montana, I'm happy to support Prairie Public in North Dakota, and I will continue to listen and support this station in the future. I cannot stress this enough, people. Those are the kinds of comments that make us stop and go, okay, we're working during a pandemic. We're working during a crazy election cycle. The legislature is always doing something. Kids are learning how to go to school or not go to school. There's vaccine debate. And sometimes it can be very stressful to do what we do. And then a comment like this just cuts through the ether, and we're reminded that what we do impacts people, impacts humans. And we just love to hear those. So thank you for sharing those inspiring words. Whether you've been in this state for a month or 10 years, it's time to support it. Don't let someone else just pick up the tab. I do that whenever I go to a bar, but when I'm listening to public radio, I pick up my own tab. Do your part now by calling 800-359-4145. Madeline in studio with me today to share in the wonderfulness that is how to support public radio.
Yes, I am here to share that with you, Ashley, and you can set up your monthly sustaining gift so easily and quickly on a credit card, or you can choose to have your monthly gift come out of your checking account. Auto-renew, meaning you never have to remind you it's time to renew. It just, your gift goes into paying for programming, so that sustaining membership is a great way to do this, and it has a nice extra little benefit as well. Call or text donate to 800-359-4145 or give at prairiepublic.org. You can also set up a $10 a month contribution, and we'll send you the highly acclaimed debut memoir by musician Michael Patrick F. Smith year of hard work and self-discovery in the Bakken, called The Good Hand, A Memoir of Work, Brotherhood, and Transformation in an American Boomtown.
It really is simple to set up your donation. Give us a call, 800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org. We've had Michael on Main Street and the Great American Folk Show to do a reading and to play some music. So whatever you are tuning to Prairie Public for, author interviews, movie reviews, getting to hear TV, music, and then, of course, we're hearing from politicians, from educators, from scientists. We cover all of it on Main Street, and we can only do it with your help. Member revenue is the single biggest piece of, you know, the budget chart. If you split this into a pie chart, the biggest piece of pie comes from our members. You do the lion's share of the support here, and we cannot thank you enough for that. Please know that we use that money responsibly to bring you more programs that you enjoy. So call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we visit with Jack Russell Weinstein, host of Why? Philosophical Discussions About Everyday Life, as he and his guest talk about the philosophy of being a business consultant. We also have our Friday favorites. News director Dave Thompson joins us for our weekly news discussion. And Madeline will be back tomorrow to review the new film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. It looks like a pretty quirky film. That's coming up tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.